Hello, everybody. I'm here with the one and only Kelby Crandall. We were catching up just for a quick second, talking about the last time we've seen each other. We went out for pho maybe 4 years ago in Provo, and that's the last time. I think you were recently married or engaged at the time, too.
Yeah, probably 4 years ago, married. Yeah. We're going on, this year will be our sixth wedding anniversary.
So. Oh man. Well, get us up to speed. When did you get home, and what have the stream of events looked like since then?
Yeah, so I was in Minnesota from 2011 to 2013. And then I got home to basically an empty house, just my little sister who was in junior high. And then I met my wife. So my wife, we knew each other before. We actually went to junior high school together. And then we actually went separate ways. I went to different high schools. And then when I got home, all my friends are either serving missions or doing other things. So I was just, all right, well, I guess we'll start dating. And ended up signing into my wife's DMs. So pretty cool. And then, I got home in November, started talking to her in December, but we didn't go on our first date until February. Then we did it off really well. Dating from when we ended up getting married in September of 2014. And then since then, we've just been working. My wife finished school. I'm still going to school. We have a 15-month-old daughter. But yeah.
And you're going to school, BYU, UVU, where are you at?
So it's an online program through BYU Idaho. Going into computer science.
Oh, nice. And where are you living?
In Mapleton.
Oh, in Mapleton. I love Mapleton.
Yes. I grew up in Spanish Fork. My wife grew up in Salem. So Mapleton was a good spot for us and we love it.
Salem, that's a pretty small town, right?
Yeah, it's growing now, but probably, I don't know how many people they have now, but when I was growing up, they were only like 5,000 people, somewhere around there. Yeah. Not huge.
Wow, cool. So you're studying computer science, and you said your wife graduated. What'd she graduate in?
So she graduated in community health education.
Cool.
She doesn't do anything with her degree. She works with she works at an herbal manufacturing company. So they manufacture herbal supplements, medicines, things like that. They're all organic and herbal based. But it's a family company, so her mom has worked there forever. She's the accountant of the company, and she started working there in high school and college, and it's just worked out for her. She's been there since.
Wow. Well, that's sweet. How are you liking school?
It's good. It's it's good. One step at a time.
I don't know much about how the CS program is online. But I've had some friends who did it at BYU Provo, and they talked about, you know, some of the classes are really fun. Some of them are just really grueling, you know?
Oh, yeah. I took a programming class and just wanted to shoot myself. I was like, hey, that part of computer science, part of the technology field is not for me. So I knew that for sure.
So what are you interested in CS?
Yeah, so I like building computers. I like the server management, network management, hardware, that type of stuff.
Cool.
More of the networking side rather than programming.
Yeah, that's sweet. Yeah, I used to work in a NOC at BYU, So server, 24/7 server maintenance for the churches and BYU's servers. So yeah. I don't know that much, but I know who to call. I know a couple little basic things, but yeah, the people who worked on that, it's cool because you complete a big project, you know, when you set up something like that. So,
yep, I agree.
Well, that's exciting, man. Yeah. So, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so I'm currently work at a software company right now called Bamboo HR. It's kind of one of the bigger companies in Utah County.
Yeah, I know Bamboo HR.
Yeah. Actually, Kelton Abbott used to work there with me from the mission, but he moved on. But other than that, but it's a great company. I do sales there right now, but here in the near future, hopefully transitioning over to the IT department. So,
oh, cool. At Bamboo, you're wanting to stay at Bamboo and just take on a different role.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
Well, that's a big transition from sales to to the IT team.
I know. I've been there 3 years. It's nice too because I have a buddy that's in the IT department there too. So, kind of makes it nice to get my foot in the door that way. But I've been doing sales for a long time, but it's good. I like it.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some crossover. You're going to have a unique perspective on things after being on the different side of the business, you know?
Definitely. And I mean, sales team's huge. So I know very personally a lot of the salespeople, so I can communicate with them and I have relationships with them already. So it works out good.
Cool. Well, hey, let's move into the something to watch, something to read, something to listen to, and something to play section. We'll just take them one at a time. What's something to watch? Movie or TV show you've been watching lately that you like?
I found a good TV show recently that we've been like binge watching. I'm not a huge movie guy either. That's the problem. If I'm watching something, it's usually sports.
Who's your team? What's your sport?
Football and basketball. A lot of people don't like it. I'm not a huge fan of the Jazz, so.
You live in Utah. You're not a big fan of the Jazz. Let's end this conversation right now.
I know, seriously. A lot of my family's huge Jazz fans, and yeah, I'm a huge LeBron fan. So I played basketball in high school. So I'm a huge basketball guy, but I just always been fascinated with LeBron James style of play and just him as an athlete. And so it's kind of a contradicting and sore subject at the moment with me and Jazz fans. But I just tell them, hey, I cheer for the Jazz, but when they pull LeBron, I don't cheer for them. So, so watch that. Huge BYU fan, so BYU basketball, BYU football. We have season tickets to the BYU football. So we're big BYU sports fan.
That's great, man. I've heard reports that sport lovers are slowing down. So it's good to talk to someone who's still going strong, you know?
Yes. Yep. My wife doesn't like it, but I'm a strong sports goer, so.
Yeah, that's great. I've got nothing to add to this conversation. I was an early adopter of not being a big, I played soccer in uh-huh. high school and ran track, and I don't have an issue with sports. It just never was that terribly interesting to me. And apparently now lots of people in our age group feel that same way. So yeah. You get to be the cool hipster who likes sports. Isn't that funny? That was not the case growing up.
I know. Seriously, I'm kind of the outlier now. But my family, they're big BYU fans. So at least I have them. We all go to it together. It's kind of a family thing. So it's fun. It's a fun time.
Yeah. I never went to BYU. I went to school at BYU. I never went to any BYU events till quite a while after I'd graduated, and I just went. There's some friends of mine who it's a big family tradition of them. And so they're like, oh, you have to go. So I was like, okay, like we'll go. And I was like, oh, I get it. You know, like I think if it was a family thing, I probably would have gotten into it too. Cause it's cool. There's a lot of stuff going on, you know, and it's not like a lot of media, it's hard for the whole family to find something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Exactly. Like no matter what your political affiliation or your sensitivities towards violence or language or, you know, no matter where you fall in the world, you know, sports are a pretty tame option. The whole family, all ages could go and enjoy it for different reasons, you know?
Yep, exactly. Yeah. So. My wife's never, I mean, she likes going to sporting events, but she never really grew up going to like football games and things like that. And so like the first few years of our marriage, we would go to the BYU games and she's like, what are they doing? I don't know. Like, why did they just kick the ball? Like, and so there's a few seasons of trying to get her up to speed and figuring out how football is supposed to be played. But it's kind of funny. She knew what she was getting into. Our first two dates were to a BYU basketball game was our first date. And then our second date was a Utah Jazz game. So I was like, hey, you know, you knew what you were getting into.
No surprises.
but yeah, every once in a while we'll sit down and watch a good movie or like a TV show. She likes sitcoms, so The Office and Friends. And I just cannot get into them. I don't know what it is about them, but they don't draw me in. And so she's always watching them by herself. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I'd watch them with you, but they just don't interest me at all.
They just do nothing for you.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, what about something to read? And it can be an audio book, even though that's kind of listened to, but that's what I mean, like that arena of education.
Yeah, I like self-starter reads. I just got done listening, I guess you could say, to the Elon Musk book. Very good. Just kind of a story of Elon Musk's life and what's driven him to be the person he is and create the things he's created. And super good read. I like that type of reading, kind of like self-improvement reading or biographies. Honestly, I like reading biographies. But yeah, that's probably my most recent read was that book. And
I mean, Elon Musk is an incredible guy.
Insane. Yeah. My brother and I are super close in age and we just have like an obsession with Elon Musk. And we went to SpaceX's headquarters in LA and my brother actually owns two Teslas. And so we're an Elon Musk fan.
Yeah. Before we killed the video, I thought I saw you in, I can't remember, was it a SpaceX shirt or a Tesla shirt?
Yeah, a SpaceX shirt.
Yeah.
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
All right, and something to listen to? So like bands, music?
Music, I like an array of music. I like kind of your EDM, electronic dance music.
Cool.
Favorite artist in that genre is Avicii, probably, if you've heard of Avicii.
Yeah, I know Avicii.
Yes. But I also like some country kind of. Who am I listening to right now? Morgan Wallen. I like his music. And then growing up, my first concert, and I still love them. Probably my favorite band of all time is 311. So. I'm a huge 311 fan.
I don't know if I've heard of 311. I'm looking them up.
Yeah. You've probably heard of some of their songs. They were popular in like the 90s and stuff, but early 2000s. But yeah, I like a lot of different types of music. I'm a huge Justin Bieber fan.
Justin Bieber, is that what you said?
Yes. Yes, I love his music. I think he produces great music. But yeah, I'm kind of all over the spectrum when it comes to music.
Well, and that's interesting that you said Avicii and you really like country. Avicii's not country. Like you said, it's EDM, but it has some country qualities, I feel like. I think that's what makes it so. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Some of his songs, yeah. Like I think of Wake Me Up, it's really got kind of a country.
Like a bluegrass, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. See, and I never, growing up, high school and stuff, country music was the last thing on my list. Mm. But the older I've got and the more music I've listened to, it's slowly growing on me. So, I mean, I listen to a few artists here and there when it comes to country, but I wouldn't say I'm a hardcore country music fan.
And is it the narrative that pulls you in, or is it the, you know, like the storytelling? Is it the tone? Like, what is it about country that has grown on you?
Yeah, so it's more of the like newer country music, like Morgan Wallen, Thomas Rhett, kind of the more, I guess you could say, pop country.
Got it.
Compared to like the Garth Brooks and the, you know, the older type of country. I guess it's not super old, but that genre of country music, Blake Shelton, those type of people. It's just too slow. It's too, I don't know. I like music that kind of like gets me going instead of something that's just like a lullaby, essentially.
Yeah. Got it. Yeah. You are probably the first person I've talked to who says, I prefer newer country. I know obviously there's fans out there that feel that way, but I've never heard that before. I always hear people bagging on new country. So.
I know. It's so funny. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have a horse in that race. So you like whatever you like, but that's just funny to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. It's, I don't know, a lot of my family or friends would say, no, you don't like country music. It's me. Or just from what they know of me. Mm. But it's grown on me.
And then something to play.
Ooh, something to play. I like playing sports. I was playing basketball, rec leagues, even Elders Quorum rec leagues sometimes.
Are they playing down there? Is COVID still getting in the way of those leagues, or are those starting back up?
So last winter, fall winter, I played in like a city rec, just through the city of Springville. They were playing, but like the church isn't doing anything at the moment. But yeah, rec leagues, actually played in two rec leagues last year, so it was fun. It was good. I have a lot of friends from high school that play, and we get together and just create a team and bring back good memories. And I like video games. I mean, I built my own computer, so I have a gaming PC. So me and my brother and buddies we play once or twice a week, probably.
What do you play?
Right now we play Call of Duty, just their Battle Royale Warzone. We've played a little bit of everything though. We've played Apex Legends. When Fortnite was big, I played Fortnite, but I haven't played that game in a while now.
That game was so interesting because I felt like early on, because I played it for like maybe 2 weeks, but I felt like I got in too late and also too early before they started actually doing better matchmaking. So I would like go in and you'd just be up against these child prodigies who were just like building like crazy. And I was just like, I can't play. Like, I have no interest in putting in the hours to get to the level I have to be at to compete with you guys. And I missed the time when I could be a noob like I am, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of what drew me away from it too, was just you would get in a match and just get destroyed and you're like, this isn't even fun. Like,
yeah. Which is too bad. It was a cool concept. Like, it was a cool concept. And I've heard they've balanced it out. So like building, like there's less building, there's less building resources. Like, I probably should honestly try it again. I just had such a disappointing experience because I was like, it's a cool idea. Like, I think it sounds sweet, but it just didn't work.
Yeah, now they have like this thing what they call skill-based matchmaking. So it's like if you go in and you're a level one, right, you're a noob, you're going to get in lobbies or matches with noobs, not like some 12-year-old pig that's just going to crack and amazing at the game. But yeah, so I haven't played that for a while, but mostly right now I play Call of Duty, Warzone, my friend's brother.
That's sweet. Yeah, it's video games have been really cool, especially during the pandemic, to be able to keep in touch with people, you know?
Yeah, it has been. It's friends, family, whoever, you know. Yeah. It's just, it's a good outlet sometimes.
Well, cool. So big on shooters, sounds like. Mostly playing a lot of shooters, or?
Yeah, mostly shooters, multiplayer games. I was really big into sports games, basketball, like 2K and FIFA. I played a lot of FIFA. Back when I was in high school, I could do nothing all day and just invite my friends over and play together, but can't really do that now. So I'm more into the ones online games where you can just, hey, you're getting on, bro, let's play. So.
Yeah, shorter matches, you know, quicker dopamine rush, you know.
Exactly.
It's just better for the...
better experience.
Cool. Well, the next section, there's two questions. The first one is, what do you miss the most from the mission? And then the second one is, what do you not miss as much from the mission?
Oh, what do I miss? I miss the people. So I was a Hmong elder. I had a unique experience. From my records and from my knowledge, I was the first Hmong elder to never leave the Hmong branch. So I served in the same branch my entire mission.
Whoa! Yeah, I've never heard of that happening.
Yeah, so a lot of what happens, a lot of the Hmong elders, they serve majority of their mission there, but they'll go and work zebra work in like Eau Claire, La Crosse,
right?
And then, or they'll just go to, they'll do some English work for a few transfers and then come back. But it's just a unique timing when I came into the mission as a Hmong elder, and I just how it worked out. I never left the branch. So holy, I really only had three areas my entire mission. But yeah, same branch
my entire mission. Oh, I see. So, three areas, same branch. So you didn't stay in the same geographic zone your whole mission.
Yeah, so I served in Frogtown. And then I served in Eastside St. Paul. And then after that, I served in Minneapolis.
Got it.
So, and it's kind of weird how the Hmong areas work. So like Frogtown was just obviously like a small part of inner St. Paul. And then Eastside St. Paul basically covered one half of the mission, but they really only worked like one part of St. Paul, West St. Paul.
Sure.
And then Minneapolis just covered like basically where the main working areas we would work is North Mini, Brooklyn Park and Brooklyn Center is really the main areas where we were.
Were there a lot of Hmong people in Brooklyn Park and Brooklyn Center?
There, not as many as like North Mini or St. Paul, but there were some there. But
yeah, I was in Shingle Creek, and I don't know if I ever met a Hmong person when I was in Shingle Creek. But of course, when I was in Dinkytown and going on exchange to St. Paul and stuff, it was like tons and tons.
So obviously the people I miss a lot. I developed a strong relationship with the ward or the branch members, and the food, I miss Hmong food a lot. I try to make it
have you been good, back
but, so I went back So I got home in November 2013. I went back in May of 2014. And I haven't been back since. But Luckily, there's been some remedies here, like some of the Hmong members either come to like BYU Idaho or BYU for school, and they'll make some stuff and kind of gets my fix for a bit. But
well, because you knew probably all of the Hmong members, at least in that branch. You know, I mean, you were with them for 2 years. You pretty much knew them all pretty well.
Yeah, exactly. So, So when they come here or whatnot, so I have that pretty strong relationship with them still, and they'll send me recipes and how I can make it. So I'll go to like the Asian market here and try and find the closest things to what I need, and it's fun. But other than that, I think Christmas, just being a missionary sometimes, right? Just preaching and teaching people about the gospel on a daily basis. I think, I miss that feeling sometimes, and it's kind of a void you have to fill with other stuff when you're not a full-time missionary.
Yeah. And so tell me more about that.
Ways I've found filling that void is a lot of my high school friends, unfortunately, are either not active or they're just not active and just kind of on a completely different path when it comes to religion. And I mean, they're still my friends and I love them, and it's created opportunities for me to be an example and to have conversations about the church or just about religion or spirituality in general with them, and just having those conversations with them every once in a while. And it's not super often, but it fills that void. You feel that spirit again of teaching and sharing something that means something to you, to someone that could use it. So my last companion went home early and has kind of fallen away in the church, and talk all the time. And we didn't have the strongest companionship. We didn't see eye to eye on some stuff. But it's kind of interesting after and where we're at now in our lives. How our relationship is actually really good. Like we're really good friends now. Mm-hmm. And I've had opportunities and I've had conversations with him that have allowed me to just be like, look, man, you know what's right, you know what you're supposed to be doing. I'm not here to tell you what to do, but I'm here to help you, like, be that person for him, to help him relive or feel those feelings he had on the mission and the spiritual that he's maybe missed over the last years and stuff. So that's been a great opportunity for me to just kind of fill those voids of being a missionary.
Wow. So you feel a void of just, I'm trying to understand the void a little bit more. Like
I think just helping people spirituality wise. Helping them feel something greater or rekindle those feelings that they've once had. Those feelings you get when you're in a lesson and you just know this, you can feel the spirit so strong and you just know everything's good, and you those feelings, those highs, I guess you could say, trying to fill those with, I don't teach on a daily basis, or I don't have those opportunities on a daily basis like I once had as a missionary.
And tell me if I'm understanding correct, is it like, it gives you a sense of like meaning and purpose, like I'm making an impact on this world, like I'm helping people to come closer and make decisions that will make them happy, that will ultimately lead them to return to live with God. And that like fills me with like purpose and meaning. I'm contributing something more than the rat race, right?
Exactly. Yeah. That's perfect how you describe that. And, you know, you always hear, it's kind of a cliche thing. It's like when you're a missionary and you're kind of getting ready to come home, you're like, oh, I'm going to be the best member missionary. I'm going to go on splits with the elders and I'm going to give them member referrals. And then I got home and I was like, yeah, like, as far as I can see, my neighbor, all of them are members of the church. And they all come to church.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like I don't, so when I got home, I was like, I wanted to do that, but didn't really, I mean, it didn't work out. It was hard. It's hard to do that in a place so densely populated with members, but I found different routes, right? Friends and preaching pains or just people I talked to at work that moved from out of state. I've had conversations. So there's opportunities, but it might not have been the route I was looking for when I was getting ready to leave the mission.
Yeah, if you don't mind, I want to kind of share something too on that, kind of flesh that out. Because my wife served a mission as well. And we had set a goal, you know, we were like, we're getting out of Utah as soon as we graduate. And we wanted to move to a ward that had its own set of missionaries. That was like how our bar for measuring the fact that there was a lot of work to do, you know, because in Utah, you have like a stake, you know, exactly. Missionaries assigned at a stake level, you know? So anyways, well, that's just not how things turned out for us. We got a job. We felt like we should stay. We got a house. And, you know, part of me is kind of sad about it because I've lost a lot of the momentum that I had to go out and share. And I can't, you know, I shouldn't be too hard because it was a spiritual, you know, too hard on myself because it was a spirit-guided decision, right, to stay. Mm-hmm. And I feel like my perspective has kind of shifted of just like maybe instead of and like I said, I leave room for me to change my mind in a different environment, but at least how I've felt, because I felt the same thing of like pushing up of like I've, you know, we've got like 6 non-member people here in our ward and they've heard it. You know,
yeah,
they have had it hammered to death, you know. And so I've kind of arrived at this place where I'm like, first off, I'm like, is there only meaning in sharing? Like, I kind of like, for me, like looked at myself and was just like, well, is it valuable to me if I don't share it? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, is the value in sharing and being right? And that was kind of like I don't know. Like, I need to think about that, you know, because and I think we share because we're excited, you know, like I think that's the reason I like to share, you know, but still there kind of had to be a searching of like, I need to possess this. And if I never shared this with someone, would it still mean something to me, you know? And then the other thing is I'm like, because I can't, and I shouldn't say can't, because there's always random opportunities. But it's like, I need to just be an influence of like truth and like leading and guiding, and encouraging people to make decisions while I'm simultaneously trying to figure those things out. Cause I definitely do not have religion or personal effectiveness or any of that stuff figured out, but I'm on a journey and I have little bits that I'm learning and share. I'm imperfect. This is kind of where I'm at. These are the things that I'm thinking about that are at least where I'm operating right now. It's my truth right now, you know? And so anyways, I don't know if you resonate with that, but it's kind of been a similar thing for me. And now it's like, I don't know. I almost don't even see like member, non-member. Cause a lot of my friends who have left the church are so bitter that it's almost like I don't talk church, I talk truth. You know what I mean? And it's like, let's just talk about principles of happiness. Let's just talk about God and following the Spirit. You know what I mean? Anyways, yeah. I don't know if any of that resonates with you, but you saying that, I'm like, yeah, I relate to that feeling, but why? But I put it in different terms, and so I think you helped me kind of figure that out. But anyways, does any of that resonate with you?
Yeah, definitely. Like a lot of my friends, my really close friends that out of my group in high school, my friends, I think me and one other friend is still active in the church. And they're on a path of worldliness, partying and having fun.
So they're not leaving. They're not leaving to pursue something higher. They're leaving to indulge, essentially.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And they've come to the point. They've come to the point of where they believe in God, but they don't believe. They're at the point where it's like, oh, well, if I'm a good guy and I do, you know, I don't do bad things to other people, then I don't see anything wrong with how I'm living. And so our conversations are more kind of engaged in, I guess, just spiritual and more broad topics of religion rather than, hey, you know, you're not living the word of wisdom. Like, how can I help you type of thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to go to their house and take all their alcohol out of their pantry, but how I feel is, you know, when my friends invite me to do something, like when we, like, hey, we're getting together, we're having a party, come by and hang out with us, I'll go. Like, I'll support them. I'll be there to be their friend, but I set the example and they already know that I'm not going to drink your alcohol. I'm not going to participate in this type of things, but I'll be there and have fun with you. Right. I'll be there to be your friend. And it's kind of created this relationship of, you know, I respect you and you respect me, but we can agree on that. We both believe in, you know, God, and we both believe in, certain principles.
Totally.
And every once in a while, you know, you'll get kind of deeper into those, I guess you could say more, gospel doctrine. And it's those times where you're really like, hey, you know, they still have that yearning to know, or they still have questions and they still have that spiritual desire to increase their spirituality. But it just may not be the right time for them to pursue that.
Yeah. And I definitely relate to that. You know, something that's really funny to me, and I don't mean to be disparaging to people who say this, but like, yeah, the whole, like, you know, we just need to be good people and God will love us. It's the whole, you have to hear me out here, but the whole idea of like, I am a good person is kind of insane to me. Like, anyone who claims that, like, yeah, I'm a good person. And it's like, what? You're a good person? I don't think I'm a good person. You must have something figured out, you know? And like, or like when people are like, oh, why did so-and-so die? Because they were such a good person. I'm like, well, first off, do only bad people die? Like, did I miss that? And then second off, what makes this person a good person? Now, to clarify what I'm saying, I'm not saying everyone is the worst, though everyone kind of is as well.
Yeah.
It's like, I think everyone is enough. I think people are basically good, have desires to do good. But to say that most everyone is good is like kind of crazy to me. Now, I also don't think we necessarily have to be good to be saved either. Otherwise, I think we'd be in a really bad place. I think the desire to be good and striving for good is, you know, that's what's expected of us, because we fall short. We still have evil intentions. It's easy to get corrupted by, you know, we've talked about it on other sessions, but like the God complex that can develop when you're a missionary, where you're like, I'm doing this because I believe it, but also, man, it feels really good to say, "Thus saith the Lord," and command people to change their lives. Like, it's a weird, very slight line that's crossed, you know? And so anyways, basically what I'm driving at is, like, I agree with your friends and I vehemently disagree. And maybe it's just a semantics thing of, like, I do think that God loves them no matter what. And I do think God is rooting for them to return to him. And I think all of us need to always be seeking him, you know, in whatever way that means, you know. But if we can't, okay, sorry. One more thing while I'm on my soapbox.
Yeah, no.
But I had an awesome temple interview a couple years ago where I didn't really know the guy in the stake presence. I knew his face, but, you know, I still don't even really know his name. And he said, "When I ask you these questions, I want you to picture that you're answering the Savior," you know. So he goes through the temple recommend questions, and I do the exercise. And then at the end, he's like, "What did that make you feel?" And I said, "Honestly, this has been one of the easiest temple recommend interviews I've ever been in, because I know that I'm good with Christ. I don't know if you think that I'm good with Christ, you know?" Because in a lot of those interviews, I'm like, yeah, I'm answering this, but also, like, you're like, not that I'm like second guessing myself, but you're like, what does this guy think that looks like? Like, is he judging me? Is he whatever else? And then pushing that person out of my mind, I'm like, oh, I know I'm good with God. Like, we've talked, you know, we have talked. We know, I know where I stand with him. I know what he thinks of me. You know what I mean? I know where I'm strong. I know where I'm weak. You, I don't know who you are. You know, you're some guy in the stake presidency. But anyways, I think that's the main thing is I think your friend's sentiment is correct, though I think good is probably the wrong word. But I think their sentiment is correct, but I think it has to be a real accounting with a real God. You know what I mean? Yep. Instead of, like, the idea of God wants me to be the idea of good, and I'm not going to spend any time defining those. I'm not going to spend any time talking with him to see where I stack up and where I need to improve. I'm just going to say the concept of God and the concept of me are good. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're squared away. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, totally. And it's like, just like you're saying, like, the concept of good should be on a personal level with you and God. It shouldn't be, you know, I'm a good guy, I do these things, I you know.
Right. I haven't killed anyone. I haven't raped anyone. I must be good.
Exactly.
Which, can I say, and that's a freaking low bar for good.
Right. Exactly. There's like, and I think it comes down to, just from observing friends and just people I know that have gone the way or lost that relationship with God. It just comes out, like, I've seen it so many times, where they're just lazy, right? They want the easy route. They don't want to go to church. They want to have a beer every once in a while on the weekend with the buddies. And it just slowly and slowly builds for them, and to the point of where it's just like, well, you know, I'm happy. I'm good. I don't need anything. I believe in God, but I'm happy. I don't go to church. I don't do this and this, and I'm still happy. And I don't think they've hit the point in their lives yet where they need, like, where, you know, they've hit rock bottom and the only person left is Christ for them. Mm. Or they just haven't developed that relationship at all at this point. Mm. And so
I know. I'm going to be talking to an echo chamber here, but alcohol always seems so strange to me. Now, drinking a glass of wine, whatever, but I'm talking about partying, like getting blackout drunk.
Yeah.
What's odd to me is when people say, oh, I'm finally free, right? I'm finally free and I'm going to go drink. Well, drinking is a depressant, right? That's the kind of, that's not a disparaging term. I mean, that is what it is. Some drugs are stimulants, some are depressants. It's a depressant and it's used to escape the mind, right? To escape pain, thinking about things, confronting things. Maybe that's an overly simplistic way of looking at getting wasted, right? Yeah. But same thing with like trying to build courage, right? They call it liquid courage because you kind of got to get out of your own head. You need to lose a little bit of control.
Yeah.
Do you see the dichotomy? Like, you know, I know I'm kind of talking in echo chamber because I'm pretty sure we're going to feel the same way about this, but doesn't that seem totally, don't those two totally contradict of like, oh yeah, like I'm good, I'm squared away and I feel peace because I've left and now I'm not restricted by all these devices, but I'm using these devices because there's obviously something that I do not want to think about and confront. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No, 100%. Totally agree with that. And it's just, it's more of a, it's just like putting a Band-Aid on a wound, right? It's not fully healed unless you get the proper care. You're just, you know, the next time you peel the Band-Aid off, your wound's still there. And the thing that I guess I struggle with is seeing people, I guess I feel like I'm a minority at this point when it comes to, you know, staying strong in the gospel, going to church every week, you know, holding a calling and feeling that call, fulfilling that calling. And
isn't that weird? Could you imagine that 5 years ago even?
Yeah, I mean, not
it's
even.
It's like happened fast in the last couple of years.
So fast. And it's just like, it's hard for me to, I feel like I'm a very empathetic person and that's how I connect really well with people is I can feel the pain or feel what they're feeling with them. But when it comes to those certain scenarios where people are just like, just don't want anything to do with the church. And I know, like, I know them personally and I know they know the church is true. They're just being lazy and they just don't want to do the things that they should be doing. It's just, it's really hard for me to hold back and just sometimes struggle with it. It's just like, you know, I feel bad for them because they're going through that. But at the same time, it's just like, I shouldn't have to teach you. You already know.
Yeah.
You know, those type of things, but it's just, it's insane how fast that change has happened within the past 4 to 5 years of going from, like all my friends and, you know, all these return missionaries come home that I see from high school and they're all doing well, they're all active and whatever, to being like, well, I'm like one of the only ones left at that point.
Yeah. Can I share something with you and feel free to disagree with this, but this is something that, cause it's obviously something I've thought a lot about as well. And this is what I have come to, and you can definitely view it a different way.
Yeah.
Cause I've kind of thought about the same thing and I'll probably take just a quick second too, to call out just cause we do have a lot of people listening who have left the church, and I don't think we've said anything in this conversation that should make anyone feel bad about that, you know, like they'll make their own decisions, but we care about you, those people who are listening and understand. So what I wanted to say is I feel like as I've talked to a lot of my friends who have left the church, now these are my friends, your friends may be a little bit different case, I have felt like almost all of my friends who have left the church or gone inactive have left an untrue church. And what I mean by that is the way they understood the gospel, the way it was constructed in their local wards, in their interpretation of the scripture, you know, et cetera, right? The world that was constructed, the church that was constructed, in their mind, from their upbringing and from the people they talked to, was incorrect, and they rebelled against it. Now, let me give you a few examples to build my case. I have a friend who left. He went on his mission, got super sick, came home, was told, "You're, you know, by his parents, like the people who taught him the gospel, right? This is just a trial. You need to have faith. You need to have enough faith to be healed." You know what I mean? They're saying this stuff. Then some people in his congregation, you know, kind of like, "I don't know, like, is there a transgression that you need to clear up? And that's why you're being punished with this illness." And he got really low. It went on for a year. And then he's like, "God, I don't believe in you anymore." He started to feel a little bit better. And he's just like, "I just don't believe this. I'm not going to church anymore." Well, I'll tell you, I wouldn't go to that church either. Like, that is a false church. That's not how God works. You know that. I know that, you know. But he left an untrue church. And it was the LDS church, right? Yeah. But it was an untrue version. It was kind of this pagan, you know, God punishes. And you know what I mean? Like, that's not God. That's not the real God. And then, anyway, so I have countless stories. I'm sure you do too, of people who have left in a similar scenario, or people who have left due to like facts about how the church was founded. And I will be the first one to say, there's a lot of I'm not even gonna say hard pills to swallow, because I wouldn't even say I've swallowed them. I am very much at peace that the church was constructed, and maybe even in some regards is run still to this day through some pretty imperfect means, you know, like this most recent documentary where they paid off that guy for all those documents that weren't even true. You know, like, I can make a couple different cases of why they did it, but regardless, it's sketchy AF. You know what I mean? Like, it's like,
oh yeah,
why are we this insecure, you know? But anyways, for me, right, my faith has nothing, like, you know, someone could say Joseph Smith was a serial rapist. Like, it's like my faith is completely disconnected from the character of any of the founders. It has to be, you know?
Yeah.
And to be fair, a lot of that is hearsay. I can't prove anything in the past. I can't prove how good Joseph Smith was. No one can prove how bad he was. You know, there's just, it's tough when you're talking about a paradigm we don't understand, right? We don't know what was the common consensus of that world. It's really messy. But for me to have a testimony that survives, my testimony is just based on, does this feel true? Does it enhance my life? And is God still saying, this is a worthwhile path to pursue? Because that's all we can really know. You know what I mean? Exactly. And I don't know if I need more than that. So anyways, what I was saying is with the people who have left due to facts, I get that too. But the church that they were a part of is one of perfection. This church was built perfectly and very neatly and cleanly, right? Like, do you remember finding out that Joseph Smith didn't translate with just the Urim and Thummim, and then finding out he translated the Book of Mormon even when it was, the plates were in a different place, you know? I don't know if you ever, and it was like, what? Like, this was not how the picture, like, I saw the picture and it was him and there was a curtain and that's how it was done. And it was word by word, you know? And I think most of us grew up in that church, right? Like, and by church, I'm using church in a multitude of ways, right? But like that concept, that theory of understanding how religion works, of like this, everything was perfect. Joseph Smith was a mouthpiece of God, and God said a word. Joseph Smith emitted that word. The Book of Mormon was translated like that, like very clean, cookie cutter, you know?
Yeah.
And once again, a lot of, and I've had a number of, you know, family, friends, different people who have left due to some of these facts surfacing, because they're like, well, then this church can't be true. Because for them, what a true church would be is one with no skeletons, one with no weirdness, funny business, you know, that ended up bringing about a positive mean, you know?
Yeah.
And so once again, they left an untrue church, a church that preaches everything must be perfect and everything must be accurate, you know? Anyway, so that was very long-winded. That's my assertion. I would be curious to know what you think.
No, yeah, I actually agree with that. I just feel like today's day and age is a very factual-based society and less of a faith society, like a society relying on faith or belief. And that's where the line is, right? Like, it's either you believe that the church has to be 100% factual, mixed in with belief, or you take your own time, you take it personally, and you find out faithfully, and you receive that confirmation from a higher power rather than just facts on a piece of paper. There's times when I struggle with myself too. Like, there's times when I wake up on Sunday morning, like, I don't want to go to church. Like, I just want to chill. Like, I want today to be relaxing. I have work the next day. And there's those tendencies, those natural tendencies for me that I don't want to do these things. I don't want to go to church anymore. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to hold a calling anymore or whatever. Right. I don't care to go to the temple. And luckily for me, I have a wife that supports that and supports me and supports the family that pushes those things. Hey, no, we're going to go to church today or those type of things. But, and it's not to say that anything's bad if you've fallen away. Like, you're on your own journey. Everyone's journey is different.
Yeah.
And my journey could have turned out way differently if I wouldn't have met my wife when I did. My journey could end differently. Who knows? But just knowing, you know, that you can be here to help people along their journey is kind of that void that, you know, going all the way back to where we started, that void that you miss is helping people find, you know, push them along in their journey to spirituality or finding Christ. Whether that's if you found him before and you've lost it and you're regaining that, or if you know, wherever you're at in the spectrum, that's kind of, you know, some of the voids that I've felt not being a missionary, but I've filled those voids with friends and family and even myself, right? There's times when I've definitely not been the perfect person and perfect.
Impossible.
Member, right? It's impossible. And even now, there's still things that I do, and I'm just like, you know, that's probably not what I should be doing. But I still have that testimony or that belief that, you know, Christ is your Redeemer. He saved you. He suffered for everything. And it's, you know, that alone is what drives or should drive you to just be better at wherever you're at in your journey. It's fun and it's exciting and it's heartbreaking to see those journeys or to see your own journey, but that's life.
Well, and it feels like what you're this void, you know, that you're talking about, it's human connection, right? And it's caring about people to share and caring and being willing to be taught, you know, it's the teaching and being taught and the helping and being helped and, you know, it's very admirable, you know?
Yeah. An experience that I had that I'll remember for a long time or for my life is my wife and I, before we had our daughter, we loved traveling and we have been to many parts of the world. And one of the places we went to kind of right before we started, you know, planning a family and planning to have kids is we went to Spain and then we went to Morocco. And Morocco's a Muslim country in North Africa. And it was a different experience for me, you know, growing up in Utah, even in the United States, being a predominantly Christian believed society, to go to a society of complete opposite, or not really opposite, but a completely different belief. Christianity was kind of really non-existent at that point in that country, but it just we planned it, and just how it fell, we were in Morocco the first night or the first day of Ramadan. And you know, they had fasted all day, and what the city we were in was there's this big plaza, and there's a huge mosque kind of right to the side of the plaza. And the first night of Ramadan, they were telling us, you know, everyone goes to the plaza, to the mosque, and break their fast, right, and do their prayer together. And they only do it on the first night where everyone goes. And so we experienced that, and there was 10,000 plus people in this plaza, and we were watching this prayer that they were doing to break their fast. And it was a faith building experience for me, because here I saw 10,000 plus people, you know, carrying out a belief that they have in a higher power, and seeing the dedication and obedience that they have. You know, I'm not the only one out here in the world that has that and that yearns for that stuff. And that whole week we were there just talking to people and being able to share my beliefs as a Christian, or, you know, believing in Christ, and then reciprocating, hearing their beliefs on the other end. You know, I never thought that my vacation would be talking about religion the whole time, essentially. And it was just the perfect timing, and it's such a faith building experience for me. That I just saw, you know, there's so much truth in Islam, and so much, they have so much to the puzzle and so much to the whole piece or the whole truth. And it's kind of comforting knowing that, you know, that's out there besides, you know, just, I guess you could say, our church, or,
yeah, you know.
And yeah, it was just an experience that I'll always remember, and just really opened my eyes to understanding and listening to what other people believe in, and then taking that and turning it into a truth.
Yeah. Did you walk away from that experience with any like new truths, beliefs, something like that? Obviously sounds like kind of baked in a belief that God is in a lot of places that maybe we sometimes don't think about, like Islam, you know, that God is participating there. But any other nuggets you walked away with from that experience?
I wouldn't say a new truth that I learned, but more of just sharing those truths, like, you know, kind of putting the stamp on it, and just saying, of just different things like fasting and prayer and obedience to God's commandments, and just seeing it personally and listening to those people share their beliefs with me and how they live and what they believe, kind of just, you know, even made my testimony in God and Christ that much stronger, even though, you know, they may not believe the same as me, but it was just that kind of that feeling. You're like, you know what? God is in the lives of everyone. It was just more of an experience where, like, I'm just a small picture of God, of what God has in store for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an awesome experience. Two things that I really love about Islam that I feel like I've tried to add more into my personal canon is, first is just they're really related, but a big part of Islam, so they believe, as opposed to this belief helps reinforce their perception of God, right? So instead of us being God's children, we're his creations, right? We're like worms. So that's how they describe it, right? We're like worms to God. Now, obviously, I believe in a much closer God, and there's some downsides to thinking of a God who's looking at you like worms. And that's why they see no need for a Christ, right? Because it's God will save who he will save. He doesn't need to be fair about it because none of us deserve any of it, right? I don't necessarily resonate with that, but what that belief leads to is total subservience and worship to God. And I love even their prayers, like where a big part of the organized prayers is the prostrating. And it's so vulnerable. It's such a vulnerable position. You know, your head is down, the back of your neck is exposed, you know, and it's just a really beautiful image of us weak before God, you know, that God is so powerful. And it was just really beautiful. And related to that, they also don't believe that God has a body, right? That he is, and that's why you can't even paint a picture of him, right? Because he's beyond. Now, once again, I do believe that God has a body, but what their belief leads to is God is so much more than man can ever comprehend. And I do believe that. So I believe he has a body, but I don't think he just looks like my dad and then he just glows in the dark. You know what I mean? like I think his whatever a resurrected being is, you know, is well outside of my arena of comprehension, you know? And that also I feel like leads to like a sense of like awe of like God is so big. Like he is so much more than, you know, 100%. Than kind of the than a person, you know.
Yeah.
Yes, he's a person, but he's also way more than a person, you know?
Exactly.
And so, anyways, not to, I don't want to dampen your experience at all, but I did just want to share because I got to work, because I wasn't in Hmong work, I got to work actually with a lot of Islamic people and studied with them and stuff. And so it was exciting hearing your experience. And I wanted to share a little piece of mine too, because I had a similar experience of like, wow, this was so beautiful. Like we have things to learn from each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And that's kind of the same experience I had leaving, right? Just, you know, I'm interested. I want to learn more of what you believe because it's, you know, it's, I see truth in it.
Yeah.
And, it can be valuable to me. At that point, you know, and one of the things that struck me is that they make covenants as well, like they're covenant people, and parts of their mosque are only you can only enter that part if you've made a covenant with God or you know Allah or whoever they you know whoever it is, but and it just struck me how similar we are and how important covenants are in your life, right? Keeping those covenants and keeping and making the choice to make those covenants, they see the same importance as we do.
Yeah, that's really interesting, the importance of the covenant, you know, that is that's a common thread, right? That they're making those commitments. Well, cool, man. I don't want to take too much more of your time, but I do want to ask the last question, the big question, the open-ended question. And of course, a lot of this has naturally comes up in our conversation, right? Because it's the things that are the most important to you. But the last question is, what does spirituality, life's purpose, meaning, religion, and I use all those terms together for whatever verbiage you use. What does that look like to you? And just so you don't have to repeat too much of what we've already talked about, since I know there's a big overlap, sounds like a big part of that, right, is this human connection of teaching and learning, but especially the teaching, the sharing of truths and trying to improve the lives of the people around you. But what you know, feel free to build on that. Like, what is your purpose? What is meaning? What's getting you up in the morning?
Yeah, I mean that's a loaded question, and it, I mean, we could spend all day talking about it, but I think you know, for me, it's building that sense of community, family. You know, building that sense of family within public communities or family or friends or your neighbor, whoever it is, right? And for me, you know, religion, I see free agency as you're free to choose, and I will support you. I will be your friend. I'll love you no matter what. And as long as, you know, I want to create a sense of learning, a sense of teaching, a sense of just that good camaraderie between people. And, you know, it doesn't, for me, it doesn't matter where you're at in life. It doesn't matter what you believe. I just want to create that friendship and that, I don't know, just that friendship of, you know, we can help each other out here. We're not alone. Doesn't matter differences. We have so much stuff in common. Let's build off that and just create whatever it is that, you know, you're looking for.
Unity and yeah. Building up each other, this kind of unconditional love, and also unconditional, like, how do I meet you where you're at and help you with whatever your next step is? That's beautiful.
Yeah. And vice versa, right? Like, my friends that don't necessarily believe or live the way I live, they've taught me valuable things, and they've, you know, I appreciate that. And sometimes they call me out on things too. and I mean, I appreciate that as well. You know, it's just a sense of learning from each other is what I yearn for.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you allow yourself to be called out. I think one of the hardest things for me to try and adjust, I shouldn't say adjust, because there was a lot of it in Idaho too, of like, we have the truth and we don't need any more truth. And if you don't have the truth, you have nothing to offer me because I have the truth, which is such an elitist. And I said it that way because that's that prayer from the Book of Mormon. I think it was Jordan Bollinger on one of these. He pointed out, oh, it sounds just like, crap, what are they called? Do you know who I'm talking about? On the Rammy Umptum?
Yep.
Maybe they didn't have a name. I don't know.
Is it King Lamoni?
And his maybe people. I don't know.
I know what you're talking about, but yeah.
Anyways, it was kind of this Rammy Umptum, and I've heard those testimonies, right? I've heard people kind of say it in that way, you know. And so I think it's awesome, and I think it's exactly what we need if anyone is going to continue to take, you know, the great stuff that I think is, you know, it's the reason I stay, right? There's so much great stuff in the LDS church. And you know, we've got to cut out some of those untruths. So I love that openness and that, like, I don't have it all figured out, and I make mistakes that you, as a person who, you know, is not necessarily a member of the church, still can see, because you've got your own light, you know, and God is so big, and all of us are operating with such a small amount of light You know, no one has a monopoly on light, you know, exactly. Like everyone's got a different angle that they can shine on us. And we're lucky to have that, you know, and I love your mission of community for that reason. Right. Because that's how we illuminate. That's what Gathering Israel is. It's not, hey, Israel, come in and look at my desk lamp. Look at how bright it is. It's, hey, bring all of your light because we're saved together. You know what I mean? How can we piece this together? How can we become greater together? You know, beautiful.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I want you to stay on just for a minute so we can chat after I stop recording. But anything else you want to say to the studio audience in closing here?
No, I think I've said enough. And yeah, if anyone needs someone to talk to or wants to chat about anything, I'm always open and game for a good conversation.
Yes, as well as Call of Duty Battle Royale. Kelby has his own server. So
BYU, if you want to go to BYU football game, let's go. So anything, let's do it.
Sweet. And you're in Mapleton.
Correct.
Yeah, so you've got a lot of people close by. Kalen is out in Mapleton, I think.
Yes, he is.
And
he lives pretty close to Cody Washburn and I, so same stake, put it that way.
All right, cool. Well, goodbye, everyone.